Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson and I want to thank you for tuning in to the program. Today I am just so looking forward to a heart-to-heart conversation with Leslie Testman, author of the new and very revolutionary book titled Sacred Grief, Exploring a New Dimension to Grief, which is now out on Loving Healing Press. Leslie Testman discovered her passion for writing at age 18. A career as a marketing consultant and technical writer kept her interest in writing alive through the years, but it wasn't until her father's death in 2004 when she began to devote her attention and energy to writing. As her new book, Sacred Grief, describes, a lengthy period of losses and life challenges unraveled a thick web of inner dialogue that had her lost in grief and suffering for many years. Sacred Grief was written out of her desire to share what she has learned about working with the body's natural healing process on friendly terms to reduce unnecessary suffering and increase inner peace and well-being. Leslie's education in psychology and sociology, along with her experience with 12-step programs, hospice organizations, and an interest in Eastern philosophies all contributed to the ideas and concepts presented in this fantastic new book. Along with the rigorous task of promoting sacred grief, Leslie is facilitating workshops and lecturing, as well she is in the development process of 2 new book projects. Born and raised in a small rural community of Waterton, Wisconsin, Leslie currently calls Houston, Texas home. And you can find out more about Leslie through her website, www.sacredgrief.com. So just so happy to have Leslie on the phone today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Leslie.
Thanks, Juanita. It's just really great to be here.
Congratulations on your book. This must have just been quite an accomplishment for you.
It has been, and it's been an exciting adventure. I've learned so much and met so many wonderful people along the way, and it's pretty inspiring and moving at times.
You know, I want to read a quote that has been made about this book that really, I think, says so much, and it's written by New York Times bestselling author Greg Braden. You know, he's the, I don't know if our listeners know who he is. I'm sure some of them do. He's a renowned pioneer that's bridging science and spirituality. He's considered one of the world's leading visionaries. And so he says about your book, a powerful exploration of a universal human experience. Using true life accounts and personal examples, Leslie Testman masterfully leads us beyond the process of grief itself into a bold new perspective of our lifelong relationship with change, because we will all have the experience. Sacred Grief is a compelling guide to everyone searching for the sweetness in life's great passages. Mm. And I just think that is so beautiful. So I had to share that with our audience today.
Thank you. Very generous words from Greg Braden.
Yes, absolutely. So you've said that you wrote Sacred Grief out of your desire to share what you have learned about working with the body's natural healing process on friendly terms. Explain what that means.
Well, Juanita, it really is, it means being awake to our thinking. There are so many opinions that we can have and assessments about the grief process. We have sort of some gut reactions to grief when loss happens, not just death, but any kind of transition or change or something different happening in our lives. And we can be quite unfriendly about that. So, and it creates a lot of suffering, and the ripple effect of that can be, have physical ramifications and emotional ramifications. And the whole thing that the book poses is about what if we actually were consciously friendly with the process, and what then would be the ripple effect? What would be the kind of peace and the healing, the movement forward with our lives? And it's a completely altered experience when you can wake up to how you relate to your grief and work with it instead of resist it or push it down or even indulge it, get lost in it.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting way of looking at it, you know, embracing the grief process consciously.
Right, and it's actually, you can still give yourself permission to not like it.
You're right. Good
but
point.
But you just don't suffer about that.
Mm-hmm.
And then that, even the not liking can move quickly. That moment can pass during the day, and you'll move on to the next moment of one life rather than get stuck in this adversarial relationship to a process that really just wants to heal us and contribute to us.
Mm, and is it a natural part of being human?
Oh, very much so. And in fact, I've really been thinking lately that that's what's unintentionally occurred is we've sort of dehumanized that process that is so human.
Mm.
And we've given it this title of a process. We relate to it as something to survive or overcome, or I'm going to conquer this or overcome it. But it takes away from being gentle and kind and compassionate with ourselves through it. And either we can go either way. And we may have moments where we actually question it and have those doubts and that resistance. But if we can be awake to that, it still adds compassion and friendliness to the process. There's kindness there, and there's still movement forward.
So your book starts off by telling about your life experience and how you kind of entered on this journey of grief and discovering what sacred grief really is. So can you tell us a little bit about this experience and how you tapped into the idea of sacred grief?
Well, it sure was a long journey. Many parts were challenging and I would say kind of dark or definitely frustrating parts of my life that I was very unconscious to. So my losses began as a young teenager, and many of them, several high school friends and my grandmother, certain ones that were difficult and not talking about them. And it began a string of losses, this boy into my 20s and from probably about a 25-year stretch of lots of changes, lots of struggles, recovery from alcoholism, lots of geographic moves, just always trying to hide from the pain, really, never really having any capacity to talk or willingness to talk about what was going on, and then just finding more ways to keep avoiding it. And it wasn't until I hit recovery from my own alcoholism that I started to work with it, to experience it. So that was probably the first awakening up to it. And then as I started to have some new willingness and ability to heal and recover from a lot of the things that had happened, then as the losses started to occur, it was a little easier, and started to be more awake to life and having a little more consciousness to the things that were happening, and maybe judging them a little bit less. And so that process has evolved. And when I came to Houston in 2003, I had lived in Seattle for about 30 years.
Mm.
And that change was just far more, the challenge to work through that was far more difficult than I expected.
Mm.
The job didn't work out. There were financial considerations. My daughter and my grandchildren were still in Seattle. There was a lot of grief and anxiety and stress mixed up together.
Mm-hmm.
That was probably a big turning point for me to start becoming curious about it rather than assessing it the whole time. And I began to learn that I could have it all. I could come and go. It wasn't going to overwhelm me. And then my father died a couple years after that, actually the following year. And I had learned enough about in the last year from the process of coming to Houston that I then could realize that I could use a word. I could use one simple word, and in this case, sacred, to honor every single moment of the intense pain and the joy, just really being present, how much I had loved my father and how much gratitude I had that we were at peace in our relationship, and we had been for many years, and consequently there was going to be pain associated with his loss, and I didn't want to miss out on any of it. I had missed out on too much of my life by not dealing with my grief.
Mm-hmm.
So I watched myself. What came to mind was, okay, let's declare this sacred. Let's live from that context. I had been starting to explore the word context and the difference that makes in language and how we live our lives. And it's been 3 years, and the process has been quite extraordinary. It's been very peaceful.
Mm.
Not without pain, but very peaceful, and lots of lessons and lots of letting in shifts in with relationships with my family members and my life. My life has totally changed out of my willingness to really embrace that process.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. And it really opened the door to writing the book. That was the one dream that I'd had that I had never completed on. I had gotten so sidetracked by the losses. And when that happened, and I was just ready, it was like the seed of the idea of the book came to mind. And clearly I wanted to do it in a sense to acknowledge my father and the difference even his life and his death had made for me.
Sounds like a natural development.
It was.
Yeah.
And I think when we're ready, when it happens, it's important to be awake to it, and then take the, you know, have the courage to move forward and explore that. That's what the book is all about,
mm-hmm.
moving on with one's life.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love the way you use the word sacred to explain grief. It just, it honors grief in a way that, you know, we really haven't heard before.
Well, it's time. Mm-hmm. I think there are so many losses now that are occurring that are very complicated, very traumatic in our society, and, you know, Iraq is bringing its own
mm-hmm.
group of men and women who are struggling with some deep, deep emotions. And if we can put a word to that experience, we actually can start to, the whole world can start to move forward, and the ripple effect that will be really substantial.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that. And it's time. I really believe our society is ready for that and hungry for that.
Yes, I agree, absolutely. So talk to us about the difference between resisting grief and what that looks like, as opposed to embracing grief and what that looks like.
Resisting grief will create the suffering. So resisting grief has a lot to do with the thinking that we do. You know, we start to, in our minds, have opinions, or we've decided something about that process. We don't like the pain. So we may let ourselves get caught up in our work, or some people, for me in the past, it was alcohol, the drinking.
Addiction.
Mm-hmm. We're trying to do anything but be right where we are. I mean, that's the resistance. And we actually think, it's an illusion, we think if we can do all those other things, it'll just go away, we won't have to deal with it. You know, we really think it's going to somehow move us, you know, through it. But it doesn't. It delays it, and it creates additional suffering.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the resistance does. And it will just wait. It will patiently wait for us, because I believe this is that innate, natural healing process, and it says at some point, I'm here to make a difference for you, and, you know, and it's just going to be there until we're ready to deal with it.
Mm.
Now, if we shift to embracing it rather than resist it, embracing looks like giving ourselves time to be quiet and really move through and feel what there is to feel. Sometimes that could be with a support group. Sometimes it's with a friend or a therapist, you know. And I think we have to trust our instincts as to what we need to move that through, to move through those emotions. And, you know, the range is wide. It's anger, and it's sadness, and it's pain, and it's frustration and confusion. And it's a roller coaster.
Yeah.
But if we can embrace it, it's going to move on its own terms, and it actually doesn't consume us. It may take a while if we can give up our agendas, how long that process will take.
Oh, good point.
But we get to have all of our life.
Mm-hmm.
If we embrace that process, we'll get to have the moments of quiet and boredom and joy and everything else that life brings us every day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very different experience.
Is it possible to only go through a grief process, you know, halfway, or, you know, not fully come, you know, around the circle on it? And so how would that manifest in somebody's life, if that is possible?
Well, it's possible to do that. I think it's a matter of choice, and I think that sometimes conscious or unconscious, but it kind of doesn't matter. What will happen if we don't complete what Freud called the tasks of grief is it can impact our development, our growth, and our personal growth and development. So we don't have, possibly, if we're first stuck in grief and we're like, it actually could prevent us from moving on to take the next risk and be vulnerable and let love into our lives, or prevent us from being creative and fulfilling on the purpose in our lives. Those are the kinds of things that if you're not doing, you know, all of the tasks and letting yourself move through the process to accepting it and putting that energy someplace else and really having what they might call it a complete or a good mourning period, bereavement, there is impact on how we deal with our relationships and how we communicate, intimacy, skills, and abilities. There's a lot of impact out of that.
And so grief really, I think a lot of people associate, you know, grief with like the loss of a loved one or, you know, something that's just very obvious like that. But, you know, we can have grief on very subtle levels as well. And I imagine those things that, you know, maybe our disappointments or our expectations that weren't fulfilled, you know, if we don't really acknowledge those in the moment, those can build to be very significant.
Oh, very much so. I mean, you're talking things around our careers or family dynamics. You know, the holidays are always a big time for that. We can easily set ourselves up for expectations, or there are anniversaries of loved ones' deaths even at that time, or children, watching our children grow and get, you know, our roles change as parents. You know, I'm a mom, so they've been, I'm clear there many times that I go through grief and letting my daughter have her own life and all of those things and more. And I really believe that's the challenge, that it's an ongoing presence in our lives, and we need to come to terms with that. Or if we can come to terms with that, we actually could be a little kinder to the process.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you think that this is a part of our daily lives and who we are right now? Like, historically, I guess it's just been kind of suppressed in us, or?
Well, I think there's our relationship to pain with the changes in things. I think as human beings, particularly in the Western world, we relate to pain as something we don't want. We want to be someplace else other than there. We want to be happy. We have a strong attachment to being happy. And so when we aren't happy and there are other emotions, we fight that.
Mm-hmm.
We think there's something wrong with that, mm-hmm. but it shouldn't be that way. Mm-hmm. So we don't allow ourselves to move through it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think some of the impact of that for some people are getting on becoming depressed, antidepressants and things that, you know, until they really process. And this is sometimes the case. I think sometimes it's the meds and things have to do completely with physiological things. That's well known, well documented. But once in a while, I think there are times where what would make a difference is to get support and move through the grief process.
Mm-hmm.
Then the meds might not be needed. Or
well, you look at the rate of prescription antidepressants at this point, and it is just profound, the amount of people that are actually on it. So that really tells you something about the world that we're living in today.
It does. And one of the things that I quote in my book is a statistic, and it's been around a while, but even in the more recent edition of his book, it's a book by Dr. J. William Warden, and he quotes that there's about a 15% of people who go into therapy that the underlying issue is unresolved grief.
Mm-hmm.
And I really believe that number is higher, because I think unless a therapist will do a grief history with you, they don't, and unless you really tell them everything there is to tell them, I don't think they always have the information they need to even diagnose that, to get clear that those are the underlying issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of it isn't even addressed because the therapist doesn't have that information.
Right, right. That's a good point. So when you were going through your grief before you got into therapy or the 12-step program, did you isolate? Because I imagine that the tendency to isolate when you haven't processed grief and you're holding that in, the tendency towards isolation would be quite high.
I did towards the end. It got caught up with my drinking. So for me, some of it was avoidance through being around other people in the way of, I was really obsessive about racquetball at the time, and I had to be out doing something, and my drinking had me being social. Now, as that progressed towards the end, yes, I did isolate. I knew that I knew that the drinking was escalating, and that I needed to not, you know, it's more like my secret. And I didn't want anybody to know I was hurting as much as I was hurting.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely isolated from my family there in the Midwest. I was in Seattle area, and I definitely was trying to keep the lid on so that they just didn't know what I was going through.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that's an outward projection of the way that we really isolate that within, that grief in ourselves?
Oh, definitely.
Mm.
I think we have, that's that whole thing of where we think it should be different than it is. We then start to think people won't want to be around us,
mm-hmm.
and we don't give ourselves permission to feel sad or angry, and then we actually think it's easier to hide and lay low.
Mm.
But the impact of that is then we're not doing our lives. You know, unfortunately, then we don't move through the process, and we wonder why we're feeling dead inside or frustrated or depressed. It's like, well, if we can't be doing the things that we love and are passionate about, that's really one of the tasks of grief, even is to get back to that place where that energy from that whatever was lost gets put into something else so that one can keep moving forward with their life. And
mm-hmm.
it's very easy to want to hide from people and not let them know what's going on.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I read somewhere that, you know, the whole 12-step recovery program was very, very significant for you and
mm-hmm.
in therapy dealing with codependency issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I had this thought and I wanted to throw it out at you regarding codependency and if you found that there was a connection between codependency and the ability to grieve in a healthy way.
I would say there could be in the sense that when you're codependent, you're living your life in a sense through somebody else. And for me, I guess I would probably put that attention on somebody else because I didn't want to deal with what was going inside of me,
mm-hmm.
going on inside of me.
Mm.
So, yes, I think that the experience of that can be really devastating.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really get lost. You lose yourself,
mm-hmm.
and there's a suffering going on because you, if anything, what you want most is yourself.
Mm.
And it takes takes time to work through those issues and sort of detach. You start to get really connected to taking care of other people and giving, in a sense, away, giving away from yourself and not being, communicating what one's feeling and you're always trying to please somebody. You know, there's a lot of head trip going on in there. There's a lot of thinking.
Oh, yeah.
That's
yeah.
running the show, but it's not what's really inside of us. We you know, and we get afraid to be straight with somebody or really confront an issue, and which doesn't let us have healthy relationships. And
yeah.
we can get so lost in taking care of somebody else and putting somebody else's needs in front of ours, and then it's just a great way to avoid dealing with our own life.
Mm-hmm.
And
I imagine in that process itself, there would be, once you came out of that denial of the codependency, there would be much grief surrounding that as well at that loss and that time and
yes.
the loss of self.
And the loss of one's life, I think that's probably one of the biggest things that I grieved off and on was when you start to have an awareness of how much time you lost in your life,
mm-hmm.
how many moments you were not present to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I can look back to times even with raising my daughter, where I just wasn't quite present.
Mm.
You know, those are losses, the things that eventually I grieved. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, you put that on hold for years, and when it comes up, it's a little more intense than it might have been way back then to just deal with what was going on at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So.
But then how fantastic when you do get to that point, and then, you know, you carry that openness into the future. And
exactly.
It's all, yes.
And Juanita, it's so worth it. I guess if anything I can have your listeners hear is that it's worth the journey.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got some lost time to make up or grief, if there's some stuff that's not been resolved, or even if somebody's current, but more so if there's some things that are still out there, it's worth taking the time. And you can still have it all. You can still have your life that you have today.
Mm-hmm.
But the beauty of being friendly with one's grief, even if something that's an old loss, is that it's now going to move you forward.
Mm.
And the gifts that could come out of it are really exquisite, and they're unexpected. They're delightful. And
it's not what you expect. It's most people would expect it to be. It's something far more beautiful, is what I'm hearing.
It's way beyond that. It's unimaginable.
Yeah.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Established in 1998, Rebecca's Reads is a book review and publicity service serving a large reading audience as well as a wide community of authors, publishers, publicists, and buyers and sellers. They offer reviews of recently published books as well as chapter readings, teasers, and videos to help you decide what book you would like to read next. Their insightful author interviews take connecting reader and author one step further, and if you decide you would like to purchase a book, an easy-to-navigate link will allow you to purchase the book immediately online. For the authors, publicists, and publishers, Rebecca's Reads has a variety of publicity services to help them market their books to their reading audience. Their services are budget-friendly and effective. For buyers and sellers, they have a monthly list of current reviews in the Book Review Index for easy browsing, as they know your time is precious and efficiency is a priority. Be sure to visit RebeccasReads.com and browse around their new space. Whatever your literary need, this user-friendly website may be just what you're looking for. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live.
Just to remind you, I'm talking today with Leslie Tessman, author of Sacred Grief, out now on Loving Healing Press. And you can find out more about Leslie and her new book through her website, sacredgrief.com.
Yeah. My whole experience around now, the book and my life, is unimaginable. The fact that I have very little drama in my life.
Oh, brilliant.
I love it. It's kind of boring. But it's not. It's peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very peaceful life, and I feel grateful and blessed.
Mm-hmm. One of the key messages in Sacred Grief, which is a new concept, and I love this because I haven't really heard this before, is that you were talking about creating a relationship with grief and
mm-hmm.
looking at grief as a relationship rather than a process, which just seems so heavy, you know. So explain that.
Well, it is something that comes out of language, and I think it's something I just started to wake up to, is that we relate to everything because we have language. Now, in the past, we've related to a process because it got called a process. Grief was, these are the steps, and these are this is the process, and this is, you know, we put a lot of attention on trying to understand that process.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the word we had.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add in pain and all the other things. We have these opinions and these assessments about the process, and we start to relate to it as something difficult. Or you know, we relate to a particular way. It doesn't matter. You know, we're in charge of it by our thinking. Our thinking is what sets that relationship in place. And it could even be a decision, too, to go, well, I got married. Maybe my husband died after 30 years, and I never want to have that kind of heartache again.
Mm.
So now our relationship is to grief is that it's, you know, so strong that we won't open our hearts again.
Mm.
That's the huge impact out of that relationship. Based on a decision, based on language, whatever opinion you have of the experience. So if we can realize that because we have language, we actually could create any kind of relationship to grief, we actually could then say that, okay, this is part of my life process. Now I relate to it as a friend. Now I relate to this as a source of my life, as some energy that actually is going to keep me moving forward, that it's actually something that wants to before, you know, it stands for me. It wants me to live life fully, wants me to be fully self-expressed. And if I can declare that as the relationship, I completely alter the experience.
Mm-hmm.
And life is like that, and it's not just with grief. Life is like that in every experience because we have language.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when the relationship happens. If we didn't have language, we wouldn't have, we'd just be being with each other like animals and babies.
Right, right.
But we have language.
It's such an interesting way that just, you know, the wording of something just makes it a completely different vibration and understanding.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in our, it's human beings, and it makes a difference to start paying attention to the language we use.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, lots of people talk about that, and that's really what it's all about, is the language we use, whether it's speaking or thinking, is what starts to color our experience of things. Now, life is going to do what life is going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And we, through language, can choose how to relate to those experiences. And we also can create things, you know, by somebody saying, I have this idea for a book, or I have this idea for a play, or
mm-hmm.
I want to be the next president. Then out of that speaking becomes that next experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of value in being awake to that
very
core language.
Very powerful. And I know that you do mention in your book, and I'm not exactly sure of the context right now, but you do talk about this as a waking up process and a waking up to who we are and being authentic rather than inauthentic.
Yes, and also waking up to our place in the world.
Mm-hmm.
There is a reason we're here. I really believe that, and that's my belief anyways, and that this universe is calling each one of us to be. It says, you're here, you have gifts. I'm inviting you to use these gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the wakening up. And when we can realize that there's a global presence, there's a global energy, a global connection, then we can own our place in it. It's like owning our birthright. And by doing that, we actually allow the entire planet to unfold in its natural life.
Yes.
I think right now this planet's kind of stuck.
Or
it definitely has some breakdowns. There are some things. I think there's some very large wake-up calls going on.
Yes, there are. And there is a wanting of that awakening. And, you know, so this message and this vision that you're bringing forward in this book, I mean, it really does have a broader context to it.
Yes. And it supports a lot of other speakers and writers are talking about, in particular like somebody like Deepak Chopra, who's putting out there the key to peace. And this is my interpretation, I guess, of what he's putting out there, and I think I'm on the mark, is to be willing to work with things just the way they are right now. If we can remove some of our resistance to some of the chaos in the world, and it begins with our own life, when can we start to work with the changes like the grief or the traumas or the challenges we have, as well as fulfilling on the joys and the dreams? When we can have it all, there's a ripple, energetic ripple effect on the planet that starts to bring more of a harmonic level to the world.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that will make a difference. That will alter our experience of life completely.
That's interesting. And, you know, I fully believe that and I understand that. I think that some listeners today may not quite, you know, understand how that change within themselves will have that ripple effect out into the world, and that we can really, really change the world we're living in. I mean, it's such a fantastic concept, but I don't know how do you suggest people really kind of wrap themselves around that?
Well, you have to experiment with it. I mean, I think that's the leap of faith that I talk about, or the going into free fall. I mean, we really won't know that. We really don't know the outcome. I do know that when people, you know, I took this risk to put this message out there in this book. I know that there have been enough shifts in people who have read it, who've got a huge freedom around their grief and loss and other things, that I know I made a difference already.
Mm-hmm.
I'm clear of that. And I know that in other things, when I take the risk to not let my fear get in the way of how I might want to communicate with somebody or how I might contribute to someone by supporting them or helping them move forward with a dream or desire or a healing process, I make a difference. I know that there's, and if I'm making a difference here, why not consider the possibility that somewhere on the other planet that I can't see that I made a difference?
Mm.
Yeah, and that's what the really fascinating work that Deepak Chopra talks about. Like, he talks about the studies that have done quantum physically about things moving at the same time, the exchange of information, and how we arc the energetic connection. We've got to play with that. We, you know, what makes a difference? We don't have to, but it does make a difference to start to play with that. I wonder what it'd be like. Well, will it make, you know, let's check it out and see.
Yeah, there is such a hunger for this kind of information, that the whole quantum physics realm has just really exploded over the last few years. And, you know, you talk about the ripple effect, and I think, you know, we kind of originally started talking about that with the whole butterfly effect, you know, the butterfly flapping its wings.
Right.
And so now that's just, you know, gone into other realms. So I really, really appreciate about your book how you do talk about the global responsibility aspect to this work.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. It's definitely been a challenge for me to start, and I think that's taking the responsibility for our part in the world, our planet, to go, you know what, I have some responsibility in this, and not like a moral judgment or a have to, but to go, I have a place that's really owning my birthright in the planet, that I have as much purpose and value here as everybody else because of the fact that I exist. And that my thoughts and my feelings and my emotions, well, you know, if we look around us just in our immediate lives and we see the impact, it's everywhere.
And so what do you think is stopping people from going there?
Well, Juanita, I think fear is probably the underlying, probably one of the greatest emotions that stop people from going there. You know, that would be another thing to explore. How do we relate to fear? Sometimes it's fear of pain. In the case of like moving through one's grief or something like that, and then once it's that's aside, sometimes I think it's fear of the unknown, of the unpredictable. When we start to create our lives or let life be created, there are lots of unknowns, and to me that is the juice of life. When I and it took me a long time to do that. I think when we
I love that, the juice of life story. That's great.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, because I know I didn't have any of that when I was trying to control my life out of survival. You know, enough things that happened in my life that for me, the way to stay alive, and it was all in my head, was manage and control and manipulate my life. I needed things to feel like I had some sense of order to them. Now, that was all an illusion, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there were things to deal with, things that had happened and emotions to move through, but I was fine. I was safe. But I didn't operate from that. So a lot of my fear had to do with, like, you know, how I related to the world and not wanting to be out there thinking something horrible was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, once you move through your process, your healing and your grief, and you live day to day, and you just have to trust, or you learn to trust that you will take care of yourself and be aware and, you know, awake to life. But I've stopped relating to life like it was some horrible thing to avoid.
Mm.
You know, then you can just put yourself in life, and that's really what this book is about too. When you move through your grief or your pain and stuff, what you start to build is compassion. When you start to build compassion, you can actually start letting the world in. You can start to be with people.
Mm-hmm.
You can start to take risks and start to tap into one's courage. And because it's like you not let yourself be stopped by fear or all the thinking that might have us not take the risks.
I think it's really important not to minimize the amount of change that can happen in one's life when you do take that step that you're talking about.
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually have to have compassion for yourself, you know, and I think of what's happening now with the book. Every day there's something new to learn and do, and there are times where I just want to go to bed and hide, you know, and I really have to remind myself and be kind to myself with this process to go, you're playing a big game, let's say you're doing what your heart has always called you to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, now you have to let yourself have the process and hold that all sacred. I use that little thing. Now remember, it's sacred. It's all sacred.
Yes.
Even in the midst of a day where I'm afraid of whatever the next step is.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to get your opinion on, you know, we're women and we're considered to be more in touch with our emotions, which may or may not be true, you know, and I'm not sure that really makes embracing grief any easier. But I'd like to hear what you have to say to men who really throughout history have been kind of trained to detach from their emotions and their mm-hmm. vulnerability. And so do you think they have a harder time with the grief process? And what do you say in particular to men?
Well, I would say that, I don't know, I don't think they have a harder time. I think it's different.
Okay.
I just think it's different. I think there are a lot of women that also struggle with it. I think it just looks very different.
Mm.
Because I think as women we can get lost in these emotions as much as men can detach from the emotions. So I think it becomes more of an individual issue.
Mm.
And I think what I would say to men, probably the same as I would say to women, is it really is up to the individual to find the way that works best for them to move through grief.
Mm.
Everybody's going to do it differently. But the key is to commit oneself to moving through it.
Mm-hmm.
And if for some people that's a support group or a therapist or talking to some good friends, and or for some people it's probably more quiet time and a little bit of talking with people, I invite them to remove the gender roles that we've set up for that, because I think that's something we've bought into for a lot of years and it doesn't serve us.
Very
and,
true.
You know, if a guy has to spend time alone and cry, I don't know about it, and that's okay. I think whatever somebody has to do to let themselves have those emotions, you know, I've spent time beating a pillow on my bed to release anger. I think men are much better at releasing anger than women.
Mm, good point.
You know, at least for me. Many other people are probably better at it than I've been. But so I've had to learn how to be appropriate with my anger. But also, you know, there was a time where, as part of my therapy, you know, using a tennis racket on a pillow in a safe place in a quiet room away from my pets, you know, by myself, releasing that energy, making a couple of grunts when I hit the pillow so that I could let that energy move.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really invite people to find their own way, you know, not let whatever myth somebody told you about, you know, it's not okay to cry or, you know,
mm-hmm.
it takes away from your strength or being a man. It's like, I think it takes a lot of courage to move through one's grief.
Mm-hmm. And really asking for help if we feel we need it too, and if we need to go
mm-hmm.
see a therapist. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think though we live in a time where, you know, the word therapy and going to see somebody like that is,
mm-hmm.
you know, kind of normal. There still is somewhat of a stigma to it. So I am,
mm-hmm.
I guess, allowing ourselves to go there if we need
mm-hmm.
to, and with that compassion mm-hmm. that you're talking about.
Yes, and I think what you just pointed out is what is the thinking in the head. Again, it's sort of like we're all going to have opinions,
mm-hmm.
whether it's individually or as a society, and the challenge for, I think, every human being is to set those aside.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay, thank you for sharing, and trust that, okay, I need some help. I'm stuck. I can't seem to get through this. I'm not coping well, or I'm in a lot of pain. To be willing to take the risk to go get the help anyways.
Mm.
And that is what opens the door to really being true to oneself, and I think, and moving forward with your life and honoring, really having, this is when the whole thing of sacred comes in, to go, I don't want to miss out on this. I'm going to respect and have reverence for every moment of my life, including the ones that don't feel so good.
Mm. It's such a beautiful, beautiful way of looking at it. Oh,
well, it's going to take us a while to get there, but I think we're in that process and on the right track. And
we are, and it seems, you know, sometimes we have to really go through a lot of pain before
mm-hmm.
we're willing to
mm-hmm.
to embrace that, and maybe that's where we are right now.
I think so. And one more thing I want to say about that, Juanita, about the whole man-woman thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I did a support group, I was so moved by the men that came there, as much as I was by the women. I learned really amazing things from both.
Mm.
And I think men have so much to offer us when they're willing to share and be authentic. And I have women, and I believe women have tremendous to offer men, all of us. It's a human experience more
sure.
so than, but since we have these two different sexes, we have so much to teach each other.
Oh, we do.
And we forget that. And that is part of like that global impact I'm talking about, that ripple
yes.
effect. Like
mm.
when I'm authentic and be vulnerable, I know I make a difference for somebody else. When people are vulnerable with me, I know that it touches my heart and it makes a difference for me. It inspires me and,
mm-hmm.
you know, lets me tap into humanity and love and intimacy. And they're powerful moments. They're kind of moving, and it gets me in touch with my heart. And
mm-hmm.
that's a good thing. I'm going to say it's a good thing. That's what I think life's meant to be.
And there's that connection with unity, with everybody
mm-hmm.
on this planet that really
mm-hmm.
happens when you open to that vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. And that is the gift of compassion.
Mm.
When you're touching into your own pain and starting to exercise that muscle, letting the heart open, when we can start to be with learning to be okay with that heartache, like the heartache can come out of love and joy and bliss as much as it comes out of sadness and
mm.
all the other emotions. Like that's part of our human birthright, is to tap into that experience, and it so lets us experience life fully.
Mm-hmm.
That really is my desire out of the book, is for people to be willing to start to go there more so they can have it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that they contribute, that the planet keeps unfolding naturally, having its own self-expression. What a gift.
What a gift. This book is a gift. I mean,
yeah.
this is a powerful, powerful book and message that you are putting forth.
Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, I know that, you know, our time is kind of coming to an end here,
okay.
but I really wanted to hear about the two new books that you're in the process of writing. This is very exciting.
The development of those, it is exciting. I'm just playing with those a little bit, doing a little research, and one is a book of prayers, I really believe, and I think that was my experience, that when I think there's a straight kind of talk to I call it God, whatever, higher power, spirit, source, Allah. I believe that source is so wanting to listen to us when we're in tough times.
Mm.
And I think when we're in difficult times, at least my training has been like, you know, my prayers are these, you know, positive or flowing things. Well, I'll tell you, when I was in grief around my dad, it wasn't there for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked around for a couple books, and I didn't really find
Blog Talk Radio.